I always imagine what that would look like as you're sitting down and shaking a hand at the same time whenever they say that. All right, I'm Kate. It's good to see everybody this morning. I'm just going to share a few announcements with us about what's going on. So there's a community flyer, which you should have seen when you first walked in the door. It's got lots of information about what's upcoming. There's more in the back if you missed that. And on the back of that, there's something called a Connect card, which you can fill out your name if you've changed addresses or if you just want more information about what Cedar Ridge does. That's a great way to get connected. Also, if you're new, in the back, in that corner, we're going to have something called Cedar Ridge in 7 minutes after the service. So it's for us to kind of share just our values, give you a gift, and invite you into what's going on at our in our congregation. So this morning, we're going to finish celebrating the conclusion of our series, Who Are You, God? Was a big one to tackle. We're going to have a potluck afterwards, so we hope that you can stay around. Even if you forgot to bring something or maybe intentionally didn't bring something, stick around. There's, I'm sure, plenty of food for everybody and just a nice chance to get to know each other. So each year at Cedar Ridge, we celebrate something called Shrove Tuesday with pancake dinners, and that's coming up this week. So if you like breakfast for dinner, this is your week. We celebrate it the day before Ash Wednesday, so this week there'll be a Tuesday. It's always a Tuesday. So if you'd like to join those, they're happening in Brookville, Savage, Silver Spring, and Tacoma Park, and there's a sign up out on the table in the back there. So we encourage you to just eat together and be together this Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, we have Ash Wednesday, which is usually a slightly different service that we have here, a little more interactive. It's great for all ages. So there isn't any childcare, but it'll be good for everyone. It's this Wednesday at 7 o'clock, so that's February 14th. So mark your calendars for the beginning of Lent, and it'll be a time for the imposition of ashes and reflection and silence. So just kind of a nice way to set apart the beginning of Lent there for you. One significant part of our vision at Cedar Ridge is to offer year-round friendship and support to the people of Ipala, Guatemala. There is a team that will be going again this year. It'll be our 8th year. So that's really meant to be kind of building relationships and getting to know people that are there and sending a trip. So if you're interested in that, that includes middle school, high school, and adults. There's going to be an informational meeting next Sunday, February 18th at 11:45 in the barn. So if you're interested in that, it's just a chance to learn a little bit more so you don't have to commit to going, but it's a good time to just learn a little bit more about that. And again, there's a sign up in the comments out there. All right, next we have an announcement from Matthew. I hadn't seen you yet this morning. Do you have an announcement today? Okay, after the prayer? So we'll do a prayer together this morning. So I'll do the leader part if you want to do the, I think it says all for everybody. Good morning, God of wonders. Thank you for waking us up today. Thank you for breath. Thank you for this church family where we can share our struggles and joys. Thank you for your love, which fills us to overflowing when we accept it. Like rain falling in our thirsty farm, you fill our deepest needs and longings. Lord, you are a mystery. Our minds cannot grasp you. There are no words, but our hearts recognize you in nature, in art, in solitude, in our families and friends. As we approach this reflective season of Lent, please open our minds and hearts to your presence. Amen.
Thanks, Kate. Thank you for building this suspense about that announcement. So here it is. Lent's coming. You didn't realize that, right? You know, so Kate mentioned a couple of things about we've got Show Tuesday coming up this week, and pancake dinners, and then Ash Wednesday service. So I hope everybody can join in with those. We'd love to see you here Ash Wednesday. And then we're going to start a new series. It's called Creating Safe Space, which will run throughout Lent. And we're going to, you know, that term safe space is, I mean, a little bit of a sort of a buzzword, I guess, at the moment. But we're going to look at it from a very personal angle, look at, you know, making space in our lives, in our busy, stressful lives. And that's something, you know, I think will be a great theme for Lent, right? Because Lent is a time where we really consciously think about slowing down, think about our lives, think about change, that kind of thing. But we're also going to look at making space for ourselves, creating safe space for ourselves to be who we really are, finding our true selves. We'll talk about creating safe space for others So becoming safer people. Can we be people who kind of emanate safe space, who create an opportunity for others to really be themselves around us and share their lives with us in a really safe way? And then we'll also talk about it more at a more sort of social, systemic level. Can we reach out and make safe space for people who don't feel safe, maybe groups of people who don't feel safe? So those are the approaches we're going to take. And a slight difference for this series, we'll have opportunity for people to look at each of those themes in the discipleship groups that we have. But we're also going to be starting some groups called challenge groups, which will run for 3 weeks. They'll run on March 4th to 18th after the service. So on Sundays, for an hour and a half or so, there'll be 4 different groups, based on those themes. And we'll talk more about this next week. But you can, everybody's invited to join one of those groups, and that's not a permanent thing. Those groups will just form for those 3 weeks, and then they'll dissipate, after Lent. But going to take a slightly different approach. As I said, we'll talk more about that next week. But I really want to encourage you to kind of think about going into this next week, kind of with a serious mindset, not a depressive mindset, not a down, we'll talk about this on Ash Wednesday. This is not a time for us to get down on ourselves, but it's a great opportunity for us to really reflect on our lives and do some of the internal work that I think we all know we need to do. We can't do that all the time. It's kind of exhausting. Lent gives us this window where we get to do it very intentionally. So Shrove Tuesday, Ash Wednesday, and then we'll be into the Lent series. We're just wrapping up today on the series we've been in over the last few weeks, Who Are You, God? Do you feel we've answered that question? Pretty much, right? So we're just wrapping up today, just, a few loose ends, loose details that we didn't quite cover. No, clearly, asking that's a big question to ask. It's a huge question to ask. And today the question is, God, are you more than we can imagine? In other words, it's really getting into this whole idea that God is a mystery, right? We've asked lots of questions, and there's many things that I think hopefully throughout this series we've discovered, we've maybe reimagined, we've thought through, that there are some really helpful ways to think about God. And we've probably had some very helpful ways to think about God, some healthy ways. But we've also maybe discovered that there are some unhealthy ways unhelpful ways to think about God. And perhaps even trying to move away from, this is the right way to think about God and this is the wrong way to think about God. We all see God in different ways, but there are some ways in which we see God that kind of help us and some that don't help us so much. So we have to re-examine those. So we've been doing a lot of that over this past few weeks. And as we go into today, I want to encourage us to think about this whole idea of God being more than we can imagine as actually an incredibly exciting, appealing thing. There's several ways of looking at God, right? One is to say, there's no God, don't be an idiot. We may know people like that. There may be some people who don't believe in God here. I don't think you're probably thinking we're idiots. Because you probably wouldn't be here, right? So not everybody who doesn't believe in God thinks that, but there are, that can be an intimidating way of thinking about the whole notion of God. Other people, more religious people, can be, of course, there's a God, and this is how God is, and you better follow it. Idiot is the implication there, and that's kind of, I don't know whether we can really be that defined. Others are more like, yeah, there's probably a God, but I mean, who knows? I mean, why even bother? It's just such a, it's just all out there. Or there's an approach, and there's probably many others, which is, there's this divine life, there's this divinity, there's this God. We don't totally get it all, but we experience some of it here and there. So kind of surfs up. Let's just find out. Let's just dive in and explore this thing and not worry too much. I think we get very worried when we think about God. We get kind of anxious. We've got to be right. We've got to get everything sorted out. Well, today we're just going to experience that there are different ways to look at God, and we're going to celebrate that. We're going to celebrate mystery together. So before we go on, we're going to just do a little one of our little polls. It's a slight modification of one of our polls. So some instructions are going to appear on the screen here. So you might want to just pull out your smartphones and just sort of get ready to give some responses. And we're going to look at 2 questions. They relate to maybe some of the things that have struck us throughout this series, where we're really trying to see if you were paying attention. That's what this one's about. No, we're trying to, what discoveries have there been? And so it's a question, God, to me you are. That would be the first approach. And then in the second question, we're going to think perhaps more about what we don't know, maybe what was troubling, what was difficult, what questions still remain. We'll ask that, who are you? You can answer that question. So I don't know whether we're ready to go on this, are we yet? Sarah? Everybody logged in? So let's put that first question up. I'm going to have to put my glasses. So these answers are going to appear live. So this isn't a poll, right? It's not a vote. This is... you want to go back? Okay, can we go back? Okay. Did we say to you to turn off your cell phones? Did we? I don't think we did this time, did we? Maybe we did. Sorry about that. Okay. Just stick your hand up when you're ready. We'll see if you have some hands. Okay, we've got a few people. Yeah, okay. We've got enough to get going, I think, because you can add things in. So this is just type in your answer. To me, God is. Just what are some of the things that have struck you through this series, or maybe not as a part of this series, just in general. To me, God is what? And I'm just going to look at some of those answers as they come up. Ooh, love. Yeah, that's a good one. We did say God is love. Oh, okay. Love. Love again. That's pretty confusing. Okay, there's something. Yeah. Okay, that's cool. God is Cedar Ridge. Wow. That makes us a cult, doesn't it? I think if we say that. Does it? Does that make us a cult? The creator. Creative. That's cool. What else we got coming up? Divine. I like that one. God is divine. Yeah. All knowing. In everything, even when I'm in doubt. That's cool. Spirit. Let's see what I would just give. Hope. Love. That's cool. Love, Holy Father. Big, yep. Okay, so a lot of these, real love. Not just love, real love. That's cool. Love and grace. So we've got a good, the life force. That's cool. We've got a good love theme going on here, which, I mean, to be honest, I think, man, if that's where we land, what a beautiful thing, that God is love. Amorphous and undefinable. Should we move on to the next one now? So this one is this is asking the question, maybe we can put that question up there. God, are you? So this might be, you know, where we're not sure, we have some doubts, it's what we don't know. What's kind of, as we've gone through this series, what have been some of the things that maybe have come up in some of our discussions recurrently where it's like, this is a bit problematic, this is a challenge. Let's see what some of these are. Are you present? Okay, we might question that. I think that's a very real away with me. Are you truth? Yeah, can we trust you, I guess, right? Are you real? We might be asking that question. Are you there? Just as a matter of interest, I mean, how many of us have asked in the last month if God is real to ourselves, right? You don't have to put your hand up, but I have, right? So, I mean, that's a very real question, right? Are you real? Are you female? Are you there? Are you weak? Are you there? These are profound questions, right? These are major questions we have and that we wrestle with. Are you good? Are you pretty cool, I guess? Was that a statement or a question? Are you listening? And if you are listening, what lens are you listening through? Are you listening to me? Do you hear me? Interesting, you think, are you listening? You could think about that. Do you hear me? Or are you checking up on me, right? You know, you could look. I don't know, perhaps that question was getting at both. Interesting themes coming up. Are you present? Okay, so we've still got a lot of questions, right? We have a lot of questions about God. we're going to be exploring those questions, I'm sure, for the rest of our lives. We've also, I think, been stirred. I know from chatting with many people throughout this series, and actually after the last Sunday, the one just gone, we had a brief time of discussion after the service right up at the front here. A bunch of people came along. I just went away from that discussion feeling so grateful to be part of this community where people are willing to share their thoughts, their feelings, their doubts, their fears, their faith as well. And we did that in a really safe environment. People were not, you know, oh, I disagree with you. And that's, you know, it was just a very loving discussion and a discussion that I think showed us that God is a mystery. Right, there's many things that we don't know. And we were sort of pointing out some of these banners, right? You know, we have these banners up around the room. You can sort of take a look at them with different words that mean significant things to us. And I'm going to point them out again. So, you know, we were talking about that issue of mystery. God is a mystery. I think we have a scripture actually from the book of Job, which is a very sort of mysterious kind of book in many respects that sort of gets at that. You know, in other words, the Bible says God's a mystery. Can you fathom the mysteries of God? Can you probe the limits of the Almighty? They are higher than the heavens above. What can you do? They are deeper than the depths below. What can you know? So there's that sort of, you know, high and deep. Their measure is longer than the earth and wider than the sea. So there's lots of poetic language there to talk about the vastness of this thing we call God, this divine life that we talk about. So mystery is a value for us, and mystery invites us into the journey, right? So there's a journey back there that we're on. We're not about dogma and authority, right? We're not about landing on the answers so it's not so much the destination as it is the journey, this process of discovering, reimagining, engaging with, relating to God, and the impact that that has on our life, because there's an implication to that about transformation in us, right? And we talk about doing that in the context of love, and we want to grow on that journey, that word there at the back. And then, I think what it came to was this, as we discussed, again, after the service last week, this word together, that it's very hard to go on this journey on our own. Very, very hard. And we need one another. And so, I want to say to you guys what I said at the group last week, that if you are in any way feeling a little bit on the outside, like in this community, I just want to encourage you to lean in. That might mean coming to perhaps one of those groups during the Lent season or joining a discipleship group, staying on after today to the potluck, even if you didn't bring any food. We'll have loads of food. So just sort of lean in a bit, because you need people. You need people on this journey, and what we're about as a community. And then on the other hand, we might feel very connected here. We might feel that we've got the kind of togetherness that we need. We can reach out and look out for others who maybe don't feel that they have that, and draw those people in. So community and togetherness on this journey is so important, so crucial, as we process things and work things out and go through our various struggles. So thank you so much for engaging in this series. Thank you for your comments back there on the polls. What we're going to do now for the rest of the service with this idea of mystery and God, are you more than we can imagine, in mind, we're going to look at God, or look at how we can perhaps connect to God, see God, experience God through four different lenses. Right? Those lenses are through science, through art, through contemplation, and then through relationships. And we're just going to look at those separately, individually. What's going to happen is in a few moments, in a few minutes, we're actually going to break up as a big group here, and we're going to you'll get a choice to go to a gathering of people who are going to be discussing looking at God through art at the front here, up in this section, or through science, which will be at the back there. Put the science guys at the back, because they might blow some stuff up. Okay, so. Or you could have a discussion about experiencing God through prayer, and that will be in room 202. Okay, so in a moment we're going to break up. But the people that are going to be facilitating those discussions and those interactions are going to come and share with us now briefly. So I'm going to invite the first two guys up there, that's John Vandergriff and Andrew House. They're going to come and just share a little bit with us about seeing God, experiencing God through science. And you might, after they've shared, think, oh, I'd quite like to go along to that one, okay? And then after them, Chaz is going to come up. There's the mic, thanks. And then Melanie is going to come and share with us about prayer. So let's welcome John and Andrew. This is Andrew. This is John.
have a slide. Just one. All right. So I wanted to take a few minutes to share how I experience God through science. For as long as I can remember, I have always asked the questions why and how, to the point where I drove my parents nuts, my grandparents nuts. And so my grandparents bought me this book when I was about four. And it was all about the human body. And I would pore over it nightly and just continue to ask questions. But at least there were some answers in there. And I still do this. You can ask my wife. I have this annoying habit of continuing to pore over reference materials and share interesting things with her. Well, I find them interesting. Anyway, so I think the first pictures I have up here are 1987. This was a formative year for me. On the left, you have a breast cancer cell, and on the right, you have a lung cancer cell. So that was a year my grandfather was losing the battle to the cancer on the right, and my mother was diagnosed with the cancer on the left. So I was eight. I'm 39 now. I'll save you the math. So my mother survived, and my grandfather did not. And they were both very strong people of faith. And it wasn't so much a crisis of faith for me. It was just more of a why, how. And that's what really started to drive me more into science. So it drew me to learning about cells. And so fast forward to 1995. That is NCI up in Frederick. I had an opportunity to do genetic research. It was an internship program done through my high school, actually. And so every summer I would come back. So I started undergrad in 96. I studied evolutionary biology. So we're going to answer that question. I'm just kidding. So every summer I would come back, and I had the opportunity to study the impacts of genetic mutation and how it can cause cancer. So I scrapped my plans to go to med school, and I said, I want to be in a lab. I want to be a scientist. And in 2000, I had the opportunity to start. I finished college, and I worked for a company that made synthetic DNA. We called it the Gene Boutique. I'm kidding. We didn't actually call it that. So we made synthetic DNA for people to do research into understanding genetic diseases. And I think that's really continued on. 18 years later, I'm still working actually for the same company locally. And now we partner with pharmaceutical companies who are taking that type of research into the next level to where they can develop drugs. You have a chimeric T cell, Google CAR T. It's a great technology. And you can actually fix people's cancer with this stuff. So I think, just to wrap up, throughout this journey, I would say my faith has matured. And in the bottom right, I've been nurtured early on by two parents who had a steadfast faith both in God and also a deep appreciation for science. And so I think that has helped create this understanding that science and faith are not exclusive. They're really quite complementary. So what I find is the more we understand about ourselves and our environment, the stronger our faith becomes as a scientist. And it's not just from appreciating what a complex miracle we all are or how things work. Just the journey, the joy of discovering and sharing that joy with others. So there's a great line, I think, from a movie that I saw when I was a kid, Chariots of Fire. Eric Liddell says, I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. So I ran track in high school. I'm not fast. So that is not my version. But for me, it is, I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also gave me an inquisitive mind. And when I do science, I feel his pleasure.
Hi, my name's John Vandegrift, and so I'm here to talk also, like Andrew, about understanding God from a scientific perspective. And the interaction between science and faith has always been very interesting to me, and it's a vast subject. So we're just going to talk about, I'm just going to talk about one aspect of it here. But I can give you, I also have one slide, and there's some stuff on there I won't talk about because I had to trim it down, but the one-minute story, why am I up here? Why is this relevant for me? Well, I started out studying in college. I studied physics, and I studied at a small Christian school, and that was one experience where at that school there's very strong emphasis on the faith training. Also, they do give you a physics degree, but then I went to grad school at a larger research-based institution. And that's where I really started questioning or trying to integrate all the cool things I was learning about the universe with my faith. And so that process is definitely an ongoing process. And then career-wise, now I work at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, and I work in the area of planetary science. We do some pretty cool NASA missions there, and so I help create tools to analyze some of that data. And so, okay, science and faith, how do we think about that? Well, that's really a huge area. So the thing that I want to talk about today was just one technique, really, that's used in the scientific realm that's also useful for faith thinking. And so, okay, picture yourself, you're a scientist, and you've got this collection of knowledge, you've got things figured out, you have a bunch of answers, and this is what you know. You've got a picture that's complete, and then you realize or you observe something that doesn't fit. And as a scientist, that's very exciting, right? Okay, because that is an opportunity for discovery. And so the discrepancy between what you know and something else that you have observed, that's an area that you can mine for, you know, new information. And so in faith-based thinking, sometimes that's more scary than it is in science. You've got this picture that's all complete, and then something disturbs that. And so I think we should embrace that and try to use that discrepancy as a clue for maybe what to think about next, or can we improve our thinking about our faith or about God or relationships or people or whatever. And so also in science, sometimes you have to face the idea that this discrepancy is too big and you cannot resolve it. There are some issues in science, some puzzles that will be around when we're all gone. There's just not enough information to resolve it yet. Nobody wants to pay for that experiment or do that mission or whatever. And so that will come later. And so you have to leave that unresolved. And so there are some areas in our own lives where we have to live with that too. I mean, the human brain wants to resolve things, right? It wants to figure it out. And so sometimes we just can't. We have to leave it open. But that doesn't mean that you should quit. In science, when you can't resolve it, you don't just say, oh, well, you know, you try to be clever. You try to keep getting more data, right? So in your spiritual walk, St. Augustine said you should really try to consult the two books, the Book of Nature and the Book of Revelation, to try and answer some of these discrepancies. So we're going to explore that a little more in the breakout session, this idea of what happens when there's something that you observe that you can't understand. You know, maybe some of you have experienced that. We can talk about that. And also, we can go to the next slide. The place where I went to undergrad has this bell tower that the two spires represent faith and learning. And which one is taller? You know, depends where you stand on the campus. You can't really tell. So some of these complex issues are, they depend on your perspective, and you have to kind of respect that. So we'll be in the back for our breakout session if you want to join us for that.
Thanks, John. And those guys, thank you. So Chaz, if you want to come up, those guys have a very cool experiment they're going to do as well, so you may want to check that out. So, Chaz.
Good morning, everybody. It's really coming down. So, when we think about experiencing God through art, my name is Chaz Foster, by the way. I'm an artist and an educator. I teach high school. When we think about experiencing God through art, I think usually what we probably think of is a work of art acting on us. You know, we're listening to a great piece of music, or reading a poem, or maybe sitting in front of this amazing painting and letting the spirituality come through the art into us. We're the receptacle, you know, for whatever this art is doing to us. It's not a passive process, I don't think. I mean, for me, probably the times when I've felt that the most are actually when I've been dancing in like a big crowd of people, and we're all just kind of reacting to the music and reacting to each other. And I guess you'd say you're kind of in the zone, you know, and so it's a you lose your conscious kind of thought and you just give in to the music or to the art. Which I think is more what Melanie's going to talk to us about. We're kind of opening ourselves up and contemplating the art. But even when you're thinking of the artist who made that art, then a lot of times we think of an artist as someone who is just the instrument of God. That's the popular culture portrays genius artists as these people who just let go and God flows through them and they create this work of art, right? Now I know there are several great artists in this room, and I'm betting that the thought of that, of being God's instrument, kind of makes us a little uneasy. You know, there's kind of a feeling of hubris there. I know when I create a work of art, and there it is, I don't feel like saying, God told me to make this art, and he is well pleased. It's just, you know, that's not usually what happens. And I think that is why, for many others of us in this room, we don't feel like we're artists at all. I mean, I hear from so many people, especially as a teacher, people who say, I don't have a creative bone in my body, you know, or which just kills me. Or I've heard parents actually say that about their kids who are standing right there. Oh, well, he's definitely not an artist, but he's, you know, talented in other ways. So I want to think about that for a while, for a very short while. Because if, as artists, we're trying to represent something and it goes wrong, and that's why we get frustrated and we end up saying that we're not artists, how does that happen? I mean, we have a bunch of three-year-olds over there, and they're all artists. I mean, if you say, hey, draw me something, they'll just go to it, and they're not worried about the result and what the result's going to look like. They haven't yet reached that point where they're comparing their work to some ideal, right? And at some point in our lives, that happens to us. And then you either press on through that and you keep making art so you get better at it and people say, wow, you're an artist, and you start to believe it, or you don't because you get so disappointed and you realize, I'm not an artist, and other people look at your work and go, yeah, maybe you should try something else. So we're destined to end up with results that don't match our expectations. And if we think of ourselves as the instrument of God, then we're really letting down God because, you know, if God is telling me to create something and I'm not pleased with it, then how much more is God not pleased with it? So how we deal with that disparity is whether or not we can think of ourselves as artists. And I think we should find that kind of familiar sounding when we think about the creation not living up to the creator's expectations. What would happen if, when we fall short of the ideal that God has in mind for us, God, you know, crumples us up and says, I don't have a creative bone in my body. That obviously doesn't happen. And Ruth and Matthew have addressed that when we're talking about is God just and is God merciful and is God powerful. There has to be some other way of God dealing with the fact that we never measure up to the ideal or the plan that was in the Creator's mind. When God's creation doesn't work out, God doesn't give up. And so I think by thinking about how we create, we can get a window into our relationship with our Creator. So especially if you feel like you're not creative at all, we'll be discussing this over here, and I've maybe got a few little tricks to think about creation not as a representing of some ideal, but as a reimagining of what we get.
Hi, I am Melanie Griffin, and I have been at Cedar Ridge about 25 years, and I think I'm a totally different person than I was when I got here. I hope a better person. And I think one of the main ways that I've been transformed since I've been here is through contemplative prayer practices. And I first learned about this tradition or this stream of Christianity at contemplative retreats that we have held over the years, where I discovered how much I love silence. And I especially like being in silence in a group, which might sound uncomfortable to you, but I totally get why Jesus needed to withdraw to a lonely place to pray, and why the Psalms tell us to be still, just be still, and know that God is God. And spiritual sages throughout all history and all religious traditions have taught that contemplation and silence and solitude are really important to spiritual growth. And I found that that's true in my own journey to become a spiritual sage. But I think at some level I've always known this because, like John was saying, the book of nature, I love nature. And when I was a kid and my whole life, I just especially like to be alone in nature and ponder the beauty and the wonder and the orderliness, the natural systems, the exuberance, the power. That is my favorite way to connect with God, to learn about the Creator, is just to look at nature. And even though I didn't grow up in a religious home, I always believed in a Creator because of nature. So in nature and in contemplative practices, we learn to take the focus off of ourselves, off of our egos and our own agendas, and instead, we are just present to God. It's kind of a relief, really, to stop all that thinking and figuring out. It feels like a heart knowledge rather than a figuring out and a thinking it through and finding answers. It's just a way of being with God, just resting and knowing God and being my true self. So contemplation means to gaze at lovingly. So really you're just giving yourself space and time to gaze lovingly at God and allow God to gaze lovingly at you. Being a human being instead of being a human doing, as they say. And centering prayer, which we've talked about and practiced here, has been, for me, the most transformative practice. I wrote this and realized actually no pain and suffering has been the most transformative practice. But after that is contemplative practices. I love all kinds of rituals. I love sacred practices. I love reading about the mystics. So my group is going to talk a bit more about this over in room 202. And we'll learn about a few practices. We won't have a lot of time, but if it sounds interesting to you, I really hope you will join us for the Lenten Quiet Day in the Barn on March 24th. You can come for some or all of it and learn more about contemplative practices. So 202.
Thanks, Melanie. Shameless plug. Okay, so we're going to break up for about 10 to 15 minutes. Couple of things to think about in choosing your groups. First one is this: go somewhere. Don't leave, right? Don't go get coffee. If you want to get coffee en route somewhere, maybe that's okay. But get in one of these groups. So we'll have the Chaz and Art up the front here. Science guys will be at the back, and then Melanie's in the room just through these doors out here, room 202. So go to one of those. In terms of choosing, think about this. You might think, oh, somebody said something there, that's the group for me, I really want to go there. Great, go with your instinct. But you know, you may not be sure, maybe think about going to one that you might not normally have gone to. A different way of looking at God, maybe a way of looking at God that you're not so familiar with. That's something to bear in mind as well. Okay, so let's take 10 to 15 minutes. We're all going to come back together again. Okay, so again, after it finishes, you'll be sent back in here just to wrap up before the potluck. come back, don't leave, because we're going to close out with a song together and some other instructions.